Thanks very much, Francis. Thanks for inviting me. I guess I should just tell you my story, really. Why am I here? I have polycystic kidney disease, which I inherited from my mother, and which I kind of basically found out about a long time ago, but they said, don't worry about it until you're in your 40s or your 50s, and even then it may never happen. But when I was 38, I crash-landed at Guy's Hospital in 2006 and was told to come back and start dialysis 2 days later. So that was my swift introduction to the world of renal medicine. Just before that, I met a girl on a train who is now my partner and fiance and mother of my child. She was very much a green activist. She was on the board of Friends of the Earth and set up a thing called the Campaign Against Urban 4x4s in London, and was out there on the front line of eco-campaigning. And although I'd vaguely thought of this kind of thing a little bit until I met her, and her commitment started to rub off, and it's very infectious. I started thinking about it a lot more. Now, once upon a time, I studied physics at university, and the physics training is to, you know, get down to the fundamental principles, and if there's a problem somewhere, okay, what are the fundamental, what are the root causes, what are the, you know, the first principles to and so I started looking at the green problems and thinking more and more about it, which, suffice to say, the answer I came up with was basically it's all to do with money and banks and how that money is created in our society, but I can bore you for a long time about that some other time. I guess I got activated to the word that Donal used this morning about activated. It's a very very powerful one. I got activated as far as being understanding what's important, as far as reducing the harmful effect that we're having on the world in everything that we're doing. And when I started dialysis, and by that time Susie and I were living together, and particularly when I started peritoneal dialysis, and boxes and boxes and boxes of fluid and stuff that had to be thrown away and disposed of somehow started arriving in her very eco-conscious flat where we were living. It was all a bit of a, okay, we've got to deal with this. I saw a picture of my little wardrobe that I created, was on Andrew's poster in the other room, out of backs of boxes. They're very useful. I was increasingly really shocked at how dependent I was as a kidney patient on finite resources. If you're on dialysis, you're using really high quality plastics, often one at once, and then they're getting burned or thrown away or whatever. And although I'm lucky enough to have had a transplant now from a friend of mine, one day I might have to have dialysis again. One day my daughter may have to have kidney replacement therapy. And it's really clear to me that we're in a world where this capital that we have of fossil fuel resources is just being used up without really thinking about it. For economic reasons, and in 10, 20, 30, however many years you want to look ahead time, it either won't be there or it'll be so expensive that priorities of people like me may well be very low down the pecking order of where this stuff is going to be usable. So that's really where I'm coming from, is seeing that, well, not only all of the, we talked about this morning, climate change, biodiversity, all of those things, which the more you look into it, the more you see these are all together, and they're all really really destroying the natural habitat that we all take for granted. Many of us, without even thinking about it, are all being really affected by everything that we do. And so anything that we can do to reduce that is really our, I'm really clear that it's all of our responsibility. When I got to Guy's and was just more and more faced with what's going on in hospitals and what is taken for granted there, I was really shocked at how much stuff is just wasted every day by people not thinking about whether they're, I remember walking around whole empty wards that were new things that hadn't been put into use yet, where every single light in the whole place was on. It's full of empty TV screens that are always on. Even if you try and turn them off, they come back on automatically because some company thinks they make money out of it. And I wondered whether, I'm sure everyone knows about the Transition Town movement that Rob Hopkins started down in Totnes, which is now all over the world. A hospital like Guy's, or most of the big hospitals in the country, are really substantial communities in their own right. They're as big as towns or villages sometimes, both in the number of people there and in their economic activity. So why not hospitals becoming transition hospitals and applying the principles of the transition movement to how hospitals run, and just seeing what applies there. And all of these are things that can really make it clear to the people, almost by osmosis, to use a renal word, into the consciousness of people, without preaching to them, without making them feel guilty, but actually setting things up. This is something that is actually good to do. It's also fun to use. Sometimes it's fun to find ways that use leisure time, but without having to buy stuff or use precious resources just for going about daily life. And then I stumbled across the work Francis and the team at the Campaign for Greener Healthcare, and I introduced them to Guy's to try and get some good things happening there. And it's I don't know how far it's got. I've become less and less involved at the hospital, having moved down to Devon now. I really, really feel strongly that this stuff is really important and has to be. And it's not just for the small number of people that are here, but it's so important for everyone. And it's because it's part of my future, my family's future, our children's future, our grandchildren. The Native Americans had a great precept, which is never do anything that will harm the seventh generation. And you have to look that far ahead in every decision that you make. And that's what we should be doing in what we do here. I have a lot to do with a place called Embercombe up on Dartmoor. And they have the concept there of the children's fire, which is brought from Native American traditions. And the children's fire is at the center of the council and at the decision-making circle. And so it's always there present, so that every decision that's made happens across the children's fire. And the children's fire is there to remind everyone that the children are going to be there when we're all gone. And the stuff that we have to do has to, as someone said this morning, not steal from the future. So that's where I'm coming from. And that's why I'm here. Thanks very much for listening. And if anyone wants to have some music, you can find it on the web. Thanks very much.
Are there any questions for Andy?
Yes.
You come from a particular place, marrying being a service user with a motivating, activating factor in your partner. So it takes you to a particular place. What's your experience of trying to relate to your enthusiasms or your concerns with fellow patients?
It's not easy. I think it's the same as patients are a cross-section of society, as are clinicians. I was really shocked to turn up to a conference at the, a medical renal conference at the Royal College in Wimpole Street or wherever it was, and the guy from King's, who was kind of the big cheese who was chairing it, was talking about how he'd had to drive through tons of traffic to get to Wimpole Street from King's College, and it had taken him forever in his big car. And I was really shocked that this is the mentality that is there right at the top of some organizations that are really at the forefront of having to change this. So I'd say it's no different. It is difficult, and it's up to all of us to find ways of making it a fun thing and not a guilt tripping thing.
Hi. On the same point, how easy do you find it to influence your medical and nursing and healthcare professionals that apply care to you to nudge them closer to the way you'd like them to behave?
Sometimes easier than I thought it would be. And I seem to push it open doors that weren't being pulled open from the other side all the time, but when I pushed them, just in simple things like emailing consultants and dealing with people in that way. We'll talk a bit more about this in the session later this afternoon. with Stephen Leitner, who's here, about engaging patients in their own self-care. But it, I think it's really important what David Pynchon said this morning made me think that about the activation and engagement of patients. If you can start communication between doctors and patients on in ways that make it less of a formal doctor-patient relationship, actually the knock-on benefits of that are really that everyone starts to talk to each other as people, and we get. I mean, it's a bit like in business. You go out for lunch not because you want to particularly have social time with this person, but actually in doing that you open up all kinds of other things that just make the relationship easier and better. And I think it should be the same with between service users and service deliverers in the medical industry, if you want to call it that. So yeah, I think it's easier than I thought it might be, but it's still, it would be nice if the doors were being pulled open rather than pushed.
I'd be interested to ask if there are examples of good practice that you've seen as a patient, or particular examples of disconnects in the service which are incredibly wasteful that we should be focusing on.
Great example is renal patient view as a way of. Does anyone here not know what renal patient view is? Okay, I mean it's just being able to, as a patient, go online and find out all my results without having to phone up someone and waste their time to do that kind of thing. That's a great thing. It's really frustrating in that it's not as well connected as it might be. So that, for example, I can have tests in one place and someone else can, and they're all hooked up to it in the same way. Now I know that's a very big common problem in all of the NHS, but it's a really real one. And examples like renal patient view, or another thing that I worked on called Vital Pack, which is all about mechanizing observations so that you can see real-time information. They can be done in really small-scale ways. It doesn't have to be a mega-billion-pound project involving hundreds of consultants. You can build those things really easily. I mean, one of the things that have been most important to me as a patient, I would say almost more than any intervention by any clinician or any drug, was that 3 days after I was diagnosed, I went online and found a community, an online forum on the Kidney Patient Guide website, which was a really mature forum, and there were lots of patients there. I was feeling in a pretty bad way, having just been doing dialysis in the centre of London, surrounded by very old, very sick people, not feeling very like I wanted to be part of that community. Went onto the forum and found hundreds of people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, getting on with this life, getting on with it, having a normal life. That made me think, okay, yeah, I can do this too. And the more I got involved with that, the more information I got from it, and also becoming a member of that community, the kind of peer-to-peer support that you can get through things like that is just amazing. And seeing people arrive on their, clearly at their wit's end and really panicking, having just come from a short consultation with someone where they've been told, okay, you've got end-stage renal failure, or you've got chronic kidney disease, stage 2, 3, 4, whatever, they just hear chronic kidney disease, and you can see someone arriving feeling really frightened, and either I or other people are able to answer their questions so that you feel this tangible sense of relief, even though there's someone who might be on the other side of the country or other side of the world. Just in those short interactions through an online forum that takes about 2 hours to set up, one of those things, that person is left feeling much better and much more prepared to go and deal with this and be better informed when they next meet their consultant or nurse or doctor, whoever, to be able to ask the right questions and know what they need to do. So, I mean, those are the things the thing I said up there about patients being one of the biggest wasted resources, it's through things like that that I would really want to encourage more clinicians to become involved with those things and to understand how they're there and to push more people towards them.
David.
I just want to say one of the most inspiring things about this that you speak is that the evidence is that when we all as members of the public are well, we feel quite passionately about things like the future. The evidence is as soon as we get sick, all that goes out of the window, we suddenly become very much me, for understandable reasons. And the beauty of what the story you tell is that you hit that sweet spot where you you are dealing with a long-term condition which is potentially life-threatening, and you take the future of yourself and family and community seriously as well. And that is very rare. And the voice of someone like you is infinitely more powerful than the voice of many of us in the group. So it's something we should applaud and cherish.
Thank you.
Really
cheers. Thank you very much.